Welcome to 501c3 BS, Deprogramming for Organizational Growth. I'm your host, Zoot Velasco.
We just need one big fundraiser.
Our clients are our donors.
Bigger is better.
Who cares what the mission statement is?
I work in nonprofits.
Bullshit!
Why isn't the mission statement on the homepage of our website? This might be a great question to ask as the new CEO of an old, small, and tired, quote-unquote, nonprofit organization that has been living up to that organizational description by losing money for five consecutive years. But you are going to change all that. Your marketing director, that you just inherited, says, "Who cares what the mission statement is? Nobody knows it anyway." Let's assume that he or she is not the marketing director who has been there for 15 years and worked on what looks like a PC386 with a dial-up connection where you can actually hear, "You've got mail," when he or she turns it on. Someone who thought social media was a new reality cable network. Let's assume that he or she is just a bit burned out at their job, but otherwise competent. Do you know what our mission statement is, you ask? No. No one does. It's too long to remember, your marketing director retorts. Here is another case of multiple piles of bullshit intertwined into one big pile. Which is the bigger issue? That the mission statement is forgotten? That it is too long to remember? Or that no one on the staff of the organization knows the importance of it? Do they even know what their mission is? I don't think there's been a study. At least I couldn't find one online. However, I bet if you ask board members from 100 different community benefit organizations, who are the smaller organizations in the bottom 80% of those in our country, if you were to ask them what our mission statement is, more than 70% of them couldn't tell you. Mission statements are the single most important written words that our organizations express. It should be the centerpiece of everything that we do or say. It should inspire us in our work every day and make others want to give to us, be part of us, and be proud of us. Is that too much to ask? No. One of the biggest problems that causes the bullshit to pile up is that most of the time, they are way too long, complicated, and bombastic. I don't want to embarrass anyone, so I won't quote any actual bad mission statements, even though you could throw a stick and hit a dozen of them. But they all at least have one of these things in common. They go way too long. Often 20, 40, or 60 words, a whole paragraph. How can anyone remember that? How can that inspire you? They're filled with unimportant minutiae. We collect, preserve, and exhibit, or for the enrichment, education, and enjoyment of the public in the greater West Hills region of blah, 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 blah. They read like a thesis paper for a graduate dissertation. We serve the 50% of youth that are under the poverty level in the West Hills region of, or they're just self-aggrandizing. We present the award-winning, most excellent world model of blah, blah, blah. They confuse mission with vision. We strive to be a national model for. That's a vision statement, not a mission statement. There are nebulous platitudes that have little or no meaning and cannot be measured. We are the spirit of history. What is that? What does that really mean? How do you measure that? They're a laundry list. We provide a comforting experience for our clients, a great environment for our staff, a respite for the community, and blah, 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 blah. They include typos, bad grammar, or other mistakes. I've sat on many grant panels, and there's always one or two in every panel that look like a fifth grader wrote it. They say everything except what they actually do as a mission. We will help our staff and clients achieve success. Success at what? That's bullshit. Stan Hutton and Francis Phillips co-wrote the Nonprofit Kit for Dummies and a simple, easy-to-understand online article about mission statements. I was able to speak to Francis by phone. Francis N. Phillips is the arts grant-making guru at the Walter and Elise Haas Fund, where she's worked since 1994. She's also a teacher at San Francisco State University, a board member for California Alliance for Arts Education, Community Initiatives, Grant Makers in the Arts, and Great Nonprofits, and an author of poetry, and most famously, the co-author of the Nonprofit Kit for Dummies. Francis, welcome to the program. Today, we're calling bullshit on the idea that mission statements are not important.
You wrote an article for dummies.com, and it may actually be an excerpt from your book on the tips for writing a mission statement. So, I just want to confirm that's correct, first of all.
You're absolutely right. Yes, indeed. I agree with you that I think mission statements are important. And I also agree with you that there is grit out there in the community saying, oh, come on, who pays attention to them really? So, but yeah. I will try to argue back to that point of view.
Well, my contention is that the people who say that are usually not the more successful organizations, and they're saying that because they're trying to find excuses for their lack of success. Usually people who are very successful are very tied to their mission statement. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I think, and I also think that it is important that a mission statement is not something that is cast in cement for all time, that it's something that a good organization revisits from time to time and it refreshes when necessary. So it's not something rigid. It's a living, breathing document.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear you're in the camp of people with me who believe that I hope that you're in the camp of people with me who believe that a clear, short, and concise mission statement that people actually remember is the way to go.
I'm absolutely in that camp with you. Yes.
Great. So one of my favorite examples of a great mission statement is TED. You know, TED Talks.
Right.
And their mission statement is ideas worth spreading, three words. And I just can't think of a better example of a great mission statement. It's measurable. It's perfect. Anybody can remember it, and you know exactly what they do by those three words. So can you think of another great example of a great mission statement that you particularly love?
Well, you know, there's one that I like quite a lot. I went to the Surfrider Foundation in part because I've always long admired their website because it's so good at pulling you in and telling you how you can be involved with them. And it's not as short a mission statement as the TED one, but I like its brevity, and it is, the Surfrider Foundation is dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of the world's ocean, waves, and beaches through a powerful activist network.
And what is it you particularly love about that? Can you kind of maybe dissect it a little bit for us and tell us?
Yeah. Well, I like it because it combines a pretty visionary and big statement of why they feel the need to exist, of being dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of the world. I mean, it's broad, ocean, waves, and beaches. And then it pulls it into the reality of how they do it, that they're not literally doing a beach cleanup on every single beach in the entire planet, but through an activist network. And so I like the way it combines the vision with the approach.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, that a lot of people will confuse mission statements with vision statements, which are two entirely different things. And
right.
You know, they kind of get the vision of what they're going for in the mission statement, and they also define it as an activist organization. So they're telling you they're doing political advocacy right in the mission statement.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, since you mentioned that, can you maybe go into a little bit about the difference between a mission statement and a vision statement?
Sure. Generally, a vision statement is your organizational dream for what it's a broadly described aspiration, keep your eyes on the stars, motivation statement. And it usually includes some kind of comment about wanting your organization to stand out among others, you know, to be the best or to be recognized as a leader or honored in a national or international setting. It's the big, big, hairy, audacious thing you want to accomplish, in contrast, perhaps, to the mission, which is your purpose. What's your desired result for your work? What would you like to see happen? It's a bit more feet on the ground, still hard to do, but less blue sky.
Yeah, and I always tend to feel like vision statements are more fluid than mission statements. You know, unless your organization changes quite a bit, your mission statement, your mission itself may not change that much. Maybe the way you verbalize it will change over time. But your vision statement should constantly be changing, because if you're accomplishing your mission, then where you see yourself going will change over time.
Exactly. The horizon will change as you make progress. So,
can you do me a favor and just summarize a little bit your article that you wrote about writing mission statements?
Absolutely. And I'm going to try to do this in a succinct way, because, of course, we're talking about a written document that should be brief. But I want to start by saying a little bit about just what its parts are and then how I recommend writing one. So I believe that each good mission statement should state what the organization's purpose is, It should include information about who benefits from its work, because almost always it's the constituents who are going to benefit who make our statement compelling. And then it also indicates something about how it works to fill that purpose. So I see it as having three parts to it. And I believe it's really important to develop it. I mean, we've been talking about our shared interest in their being brief and memorable, but I also think the very process of writing the mission statement is important, because it's a forum through which you can get your board and staff and maybe some outside stakeholders together to agree upon what needs to be done, what's first and foremost, and how you want to be known. And that process, group writing can be messy, but it also can be a way to galvanize your core leadership to all own and understand the mission statement.
Yes.
So, please do.
A second. That's a really great point, because I always suggest to clients that I'm working with that, you know, they do a board retreat when they're creating a new strategic plan for maybe a day, and they might spend 2 hours or working on the mission statement, because everything is going to come from that. Everything is going to flow from that. So if they don't have that down pat, then everything that comes out of that is going to be messed up. So it's really important that they get that first. And it's like you said, it's really important that people do it as a group and make sure that all the stakeholders are on the same page in terms of what the mission is.
Right. Great. Well, I'm in total agreement with you there, too. And I think that, you know, so why I think they're so important is what we've just talked about, which is this galvanizing and collective understanding process, but also the work of nonprofits, community benefit organizations, is generally they're tackling some of our communities and towns and cities and rural areas' most challenging questions. If they didn't see a difficult need to respond to, they wouldn't need to exist. So their environment will change over time. And I think it's really important to have the mission statement to refer to for when you have to make a decision, when you're facing a challenge of some kind, when that external environment is changing around you. It kind of gives you keeps your core clear for you. So these are my steps for how I would go about writing a mission statement. And first, I would, you mentioned strategic planning meetings and doing it in that setting. You might also do it as the January board meeting each year or the first quarter board meeting to revisit your mission statement as a group and solicit input and ideas from everybody in the room. Take a lot of notes. Then I'd recommend that you go to the index card or post-it note phase, where you ask everyone who is present in the room to write down the three elements that they think are most important. And in this part of the conversation, I think you're primarily trying to clarify the purpose of the organization. I think that's the hardest piece of the writing. I think the easier part is when you say how you go about addressing the purpose. So collect all those notes from people as your third step. Organize them, read them aloud, and organize them as a group around key themes. And this is the point where I would break out of the group process and assign one person, whoever's a good writer in your group, to try to sit down and wordsmith a draft of the statement. I think that it's painful and really challenging to craft something as a group. And so I think it's much more efficient to have someone write it and either bring it back a little later in the meeting or bring it back at a subsequent meeting to ask people if something important is missing, if indeed it flows well and is memorable. One of the things it's so easy to fall into, and everybody will tell you to avoid it, but try not to use the jargon and flowery rhetoric and insider language of your field, but try to write it in a way that would be clear to somebody who doesn't work in, say, food and shelter for homeless people, or does not work in the arts, or does not work in the environment, but make it clear to any listener, viewer, reader. And then I would test it. I would, try saying it aloud, test it on your group, saying it aloud, try it out on an elevator with someone whom you're trying to tell about your nonprofit, because you want, what you really want on the other side of the mission statement is both a touchstone for your organization and also something where you see people get it. You know, the little, that little light bulb goes off above their heads and they understand exactly what you're about. So, you know, kind of in sum, in terms of writing the mission statement, you want to hone in on your purpose. You want to be really specific about who's going to benefit from the work of your organization. And you're going to give some information. Careful not to make this part too specific, because this is where it can bog down, but some information about how you're going to do the work that will allow you to accomplish your goals.
I bet you said about the jargon, because so many mission statements read like a thesis for a PhD program, and nobody can remember them. Nobody's going to use them as an elevator speech, and they just become, you know, useless. They're thrown in a drawer, and that's why people think that mission statements are not important, because they do those kinds of very high-minded ones that are too highbrow for most people to actually use.
Right. They're also, you know, I also have to say, as somebody who works at a foundation, foundations go through particular trends and themes and interests and priorities over time. And I think another mistake that organizations can make is crafting their mission to try to change themselves to appeal to the fickle whims of foundations. You really want it to be true to your organization and why you matter and what you do. And I think that, because from sitting on the side of the desk where I'm having a lot of mission statements come to me in people's grant proposals, there are certain ones that sound as if they just used all the language they think that I would want to hear. And they don't sound, you know, it's like, God, engagement, community, cultural diversity, you know, just there are certain touchstones that a friend of mine refers to those as MIC mission statements, and
yeah,
they tend to sound alike.
Thrown in there, right?
yeah. Threw in all the appealing language we could think of.
Yeah. I think sometimes I get really, you know, giddy sometimes when I think of buzzwords that, you know, every year I write a lot of grants and I sit on a lot of grant panels, and every year there are certain buzzwords that become the word of the year and everybody's using it. It becomes, you know, like, what's the big one now is thought leaders, you know?
Thought leaders.
These things, yep, that you hear, and then all of a sudden you start to hear them everywhere, and right, it becomes such a cliche so fast.
Yep, absolutely.
One thing I wanted to throw in there with what you were saying is, when you get to that wordsmithing portion of it, where, you know, you're in a group and you're writing something as a group, I find that sometimes it's helpful if you're stuck on a particular adjective or a particular verb to just, like, throw out every thesaurus word for that adjective or verb and let people kind of vote on it, because sometimes people can just get, in a group like that, can just get hung up on one word, you know?
Yeah.
Are we celebrating the arts, or enriching the arts, or, you know, what's the ing word we're doing to the arts? And they get hung up on that, and that could be a 45-minute conversation.
That's an excellent idea. I like that. Another thing that I've noticed, this is a little less true than it used to be, but often planning facilitators, when they were working with groups on developing their mission statements, would be saying to them, okay, tell me why your organization should exist. Why do you exist? And every mission statement in this particular period of time, and I see it a little less often, but it's like, thus and so organization exists to do blah, de, blah, de, blah. And, you know, exist is not really a very active verb. It's much more exciting to get a more nuanced sense of purpose. I think that question is a very good question to ask. I just wouldn't put the word exists in the mission statement as your response to it.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with you. So what is the worst sin people do in crafting their mission statements?
Well, let's see. One is they're too broad, that they're trying so hard to be meaningful that they're trying to indicate that they're doing everything for everybody, and there are very few organizations that are really working at that scale of, say, world peace. And closely related.
world peace.
Exactly. Yeah. And similar to that is an inflated vision. So it's so highfalutin, visionary, that it becomes obtuse. And that kind of, especially if the language is too much in that particular plane of meaning, it's sort of off-putting. So I recommend that people write it down and then think about the possibility of how would this read if I removed every single adjective and then only keep the adjectives that are really adding important meaning to it. Sometimes they seem really disconnected. Like you read the vision or the purpose sentence and that's compelling, and then you read what the organization is doing and you can't see how they're going to address the gap between what the vision is and how they're going to indeed benefit the constituents whom they're trying to serve. You and I have talked about jargon, but, you know, among other things, jargon gets dated really fast, and it tends to be clear to insiders but not to general readers, listeners, and it's not serving you very well. And then finally, the sleep-inducing ones that are long and rambling. I like them when they're short.
Yeah, you know, before we came on this podcast in our interview, I laid out some things for our audience in terms of what not to do, and maybe you can comment on some of these if you'd like. The first one is
sure.
Being way too long. The second one would be filling your mission statement up with unimportant minutiae. You know, we collect, preserve, exhibits, or for the enrichment, education, and enjoyment of the public. You know, you don't need to make a list.
Yep. Yes, I agree. And I know, you and I both work in the arts, and in fact, there's a degree to which my heart goes out to my constituents in trying to do this, but they will be writing about the value of their work, and they will use language that's trying to address what's that intrinsic value of the art experience. What does it do for people? It's sort of like trying to describe what does a spiritual practice do for people. It's extremely hard to describe, and they end up writing at great length and writing around in circles, and it can even, I'm sad to say, end up sounding a little comic at times. And I understand why they're trying to do it, but they are rarely successful.
Yeah, absolutely. But some of the other sins people do is writing a thesis paper, like, we serve the 50% of youth that are under the poverty level in the Westside Hills region of the blah, 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 blah.
Absolutely, yeah.
It goes on. Or being self-aggrandizing. We present the award-winning most excellent world model for whatever it is.
Yes, exactly. Especially because your constituents might be an organization that does work that is related to what yours does. You don't want to annoy them.
Right.
You want
to
be, you know, it's good to say, it's good to come off strong, and it's good to be clear and forceful, but you don't want to be hyperbolic in a way that will make people think, now, wait a minute, I don't know.
Yeah, the only case where that works is if you're a reality TV star running for president. That's the only one.
Mm-hmm. Or his position.
Sometimes people will confuse their mission with the vision. You know, we strive to be a national model for blah, blah, blah. That's
right.
That's a different statement. And
right.
Sometimes they're just nebulous platitudes that have very little meaning and cannot be measured. Like, we are the spirit of history, or, you know, something like that. It really should be measurable. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. I like your list a lot. And you know, I would say it should be measurable, but I wouldn't put those numbers in the mission statement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, I mean, you just have to make sure it's something you can measure. If you say, we are the spirit of history, you can't measure the spirit of something.
Yes, indeed.
And I got three more.
There's
a laundry list. Like, we provide the comforting experiences to our clients, a great environment to our staff, for respite to the community, and on and on and on. You don't want a laundry list.
Yes. Yes. I agree with that. If I may interrupt your list for a second, I did run across one that was presented as a list that I personally thought was good. And it was from the San Francisco Opera, which, you know, it's a very large big budget institution. So we're talking about, you know, it casting its mission in that kind of scale. But its mission has four bullet points: to present opera performances of the highest international quality available to the widest possible audiences, to perpetuate and enrich the operatic art form, to be creative and innovative in all aspects of opera, and to take a leadership role in training, arts education, and audience development. And those are really big aspirations. What I like about it is the way it puts those four activities in an equal plane, so that the international quality of the productions and the arts education are on the same list with the same weight. I thought that, to me, that was an interesting way of presenting a mission.
You know, it sounds to me, and I'm glad that we have something we can debate, because it wouldn't be fun if we agreed with each other.
Absolutely, yeah.
But the thing about that mission statement that concerns me is, it sounds, first of all, a little bit more like a vision statement to me than a mission statement, but also, whenever there's multiple bullet points in a mission statement or a list like this, I feel like sometimes those things could be at odds with each other, and then you have to pick which one. You know, I actually ran an organization that had two different missions within its mission statement. One was to be a historic site, and one was to be a cultural center. And there were times when being a historic site was at odds with being a cultural center, you know? Like,
right.
If you preserve the historic site, you may end up having to do less of the cultural programming and vice versa, you know? So sometimes when those things are bullet pointed, you can find that parts of your mission may conflict with other parts.
That's a very interesting point. You know, to me, one of the things I liked about this is that, and of course I did not have a way of finding this out, but I can imagine that 20 years ago, the San Francisco Opera's mission may have been something very akin to the first bullet point only, which is to present opera performances of the highest international quality available to the widest possible audiences. I can see them having stopped there. And where I see, having observed this organization over time, it's the idea that they're also trying to innovate in the art form, which means, you know, they're commissioning new work as well as presenting the canon, and to be creative and innovative, again, moving beyond the canon, and then to value education as much as they value production. But you're absolutely right. If you do end up presenting multiple purposes, you have to think about how are you going to balance and weigh those. Well, that's a good point. I will give you that.
I would make the case that their first bullet point could be the whole mission statement, because I'm betting that 20 years ago they didn't have the widest possible audience as part of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, that could very well be.
I bet that you could be. 20 years ago it was to bring opera to the masses who could afford it. by adding, you know, having the widest possible audience, you know, we're going to have to send this podcast to the San Francisco Opera so they can hear us talk about their mission statement. But by the widest possible audience, you're saying that they're going to be creative, that they're going to do education programs, that they're going to go beyond the typical opera and do things that are going to appeal to maybe people who wouldn't normally hear opera. So I think the rest of it's all implied by that last part of the first bullet point.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm not sure, though, that I'm hearing in the very first point, I'm not so sure that I'm hearing the commitment to, now the interesting thing about this mission statement is they don't say anything about how they're going to go about these things. This does not include the actions along with the purposes. And so that's an interesting, potentially interesting critique of this one, though it keeps it shorter. But this whole enriching the operatic art form, which to me means commissioning new work. New works of opera can be challenging for audiences, and so there can be some tension in giving that the same degree of value that you're giving to audience development and preserving the history of the form. But
Well, I would make the case that if I was the education director and mm-hmm. proud of our education programs in San Francisco with the opera, that right. when I'm doing annual report, I could quote the mission statement being to the widest possible audiences and say, we've now brought things into the Mission Hill District and Oakland and,
right.
less well, it's hard to find a part of San Francisco that's less wealthy nowadays because, you know.
Yeah, that is harder to find, indeed.
But you know, in the old days, you could say, you know, we brought it into the Mission District and we brought it into East Berkeley and, you know, or East Berkeley and Oakland. And, you know, we're serving the less wealthy, maybe Richmond, the less wealthy communities by doing X program and Y program. And you could measure that aspect of the mission statement being the widest possible audiences.
Okay. I think you're in charge of this podcast. I think I've enjoyed this particular conversation, but I'm thinking, are we getting too hung up on one topic?
No, I think it's interesting because we started off by saying don't create a laundry list, but this is a good laundry list, and I'm pushing back just a little bit because I think some of that would be more appropriate in a vision statement, but. I like that we're having the debate because people can make up their own minds by hearing us debate it. So I think it's a good thing.
Indeed. And I think I interrupted your list of things you don't like.
I only have two more. Making sure there's no typos or bad grammar or other mistakes in your mission statement would be a really bad thing.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And seeing typos and bad grammar in mission statements. So not the... It's not unheard of.
Yep.
And then the last one is saying everything except what you actually do as a mission. So there's a mission statement that I saw online that said something to the effect of, we will help our staff and clients achieve success. That was the whole mission.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that is weak. Not much of a rallying cry there, I'm afraid.
No. So, yeah, that's my list in a nutshell.
Okay.
Well, it was more than a nutshell, but yeah, those are some things that I think people might want to stay away from.
Yeah. It's an excellent list. I agree with you.
Do you have any other sins that we missed?
You know, I think that this is so closely related to the idea of jargon, but I've noticed that in our sector, there are certain terms, words, phrases that everyone uses, and they don't stop to think about the fact that they may have insider meaning but are not necessarily clear to people who are not working in the very same field. And they're kind of innocuous terms, but I'll give you three of them that I thought of. One is interactive. Many, many things now are described as interactive or disruptive or dynamic, but I'll stick with interactive. And people use it to mean, you can push a button, you know, or you can put on some headphones and listen to the painter talk for a minute about her work, or you can fill out your response on a notepad and attach it to the wall. But in fact, that's not very interactive. You're invited to do something, but it's not really a back and forth. And I feel as if that word in our technology, rich work environments, that the word gets used even when it's not being, when it's not very apt.
An interactive experience could be 100 different things is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And so, you know, it better be darn interactive these days. It's, you know, another term, and it's a term that has real power behind it, I think, is the word community or the community. But people are not very specific about whether they mean people with a shared cultural experience, people from the same neighborhood, the entire city. It's a word that's kind of thrown as a blanket out into the world, and it's sort of lost its meaning, which is sad.
I absolutely agree that people need to define their communities when they're a community benefit organization. Is their community African Americans in a city? Is it a neighborhood? Is it the elderly in an area, and, you know, what do you define as elderly, and all of that.
Is it people who love basketball? You know, I mean, there are many, many different things that term can describe, but if you're not more specific about it, it's kind of flat. And then also the using words that sound fancier but don't really say more, like, for instance, many proposals will say engaging dialogue. I hear that all the time, and I wonder why you can't say you're going to talk to people. It's, or host a conversation or have a panel discussion with questions and answers. Or I realize that's not exactly something that is going to be in a mission statement necessarily, but I think we tend to go for polysyllabic words because they feel more formal and meaningful, but in fact, they can be more obtuse.
Yeah, I agree. And again, you're getting back to that issue of buzzwords where people just say a word because it's the hot word for the year. Like, I think social is one of those buzzwords, you know, where
yes.
people overuse the word social, and it's, you know, social network is overused, and people are referring to everything as their social network now, and social marketing and all that stuff. It's just so overused, and it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. So those are my additions, but I liked your list a lot.
Well, good. I'm glad we got a lot of bullshit out of the way today, and I'm really happy about that.
Thank you.
Now, I'm going to give you a chance to be set free. So,
okay.
Is there anything in our industry that drives you crazy that you would like to call bullshit on?
Oh, boy. You know, you prepared me for this question a little bit, and I think that actually it was that language that I just introduced, that where the words have been used so often that they've lost their meaning. That's probably what I would call bullshit on. I've just recently been at meetings where the word community, I lost count of how often it was used and never yeah. specified what it meant.
I'm with you. I think buzzwords are way, you know, have always been a problem.
I just believe in going back and using plain language. And I believe in, you know, I think that's where when we come back around to the main topic we've had here today about, you know, why are mission statements important? They're important if they provide clear guidance to your organization and a clear message for you to share with constituents. And if they're composed of buzzwords that gets in the way of their being very clear, you're going to trip over them when you seek guidance, and your constituents won't really understand what you're trying to communicate. That's a shame. I think
I agree. That's a good one. Well, if somebody wanted to read your article about mission statements, they would go to dummies.com and put in mission statements, or is there an easier way for them to find it?
That's the best way to get to it. Yes. Okay. And the fifth edition of the Nonprofit Kit for Dummies came out in December of 2016. So it's pretty fresh.
Good. Is there anything you work on, like, tell us about?
I guess the only, you know, my only other kind of recent publication was also at the very end of 2016. I wrote a chapter in a textbook called Handbook of Research on the Facilitation of Civic Engagement Through Community Art. And it is a pricey textbook, but I have been reading it since it came out and found the other content to be quite interesting to me. A fair amount of it for anyone working in a college or high school setting who's interested in service learning in arts organizations, there's some good material on that. There's some good information about arts education as a tool for connecting cultural organizations to their immediate surroundings. And so that I would like to plug that. And other than that, I'm just working at the Walter and Elise Haas Fund and not teaching this semester, but I will be teaching next semester.
And just in case people are looking it up, the Haas Fund is called HAAS.
That's right. It's the Walter and Elise, ELISE, and it's HAAS. And there are several foundations with the Haas family name on them. So I work for the one that is the senior generation.
And the Haas Fund specializes in what program area?
The Walter and Elise Haas Fund, it is geographically focused on San Francisco and Alameda counties. It awards grants in four primary areas. I handle the arts and culture grants. We also fund in public education. In that arena, we emphasize that are trying to strengthen the teacher pipeline and addressing the teacher shortage in public schools in California. We have a Jewish Life program, and we have an economic security program that's for people who are trying to help people get beyond being working poor to having family sustaining incomes and having some savings too. So those are our primary areas of support. We also do some grants just to general human services organizations like food banks and shelters and poverty addressing organizations.
Fran, been a real pleasure to talk with you today, and I'm so happy that you found the time to play our little game with us.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Sue. I look forward to hearing it and also to checking out the other podcasts.
I want to thank Frances for being part of our program. Let me give you some really inspiring mission statements that I found. Smithsonian, the increase and diffusion of knowledge. The Humane Society, celebrating animals, confronting cruelty. Charity Water, bringing clean, safe drinking water to people in developing countries. Amnesty International, a global movement for people fighting injustice and promoting human rights. Rotary International, service above self. People may keep riding the bullshit train and say, well, those are great national organizations, but we have to be specific because we work on a local level. So, here are some of my favorite local community benefit organization mission statements from some very successful organizations. The Beckman Research Center of the City of Hope Medical Center, treating the whole person, not just the disease. Diaper Bank of Central Arizona, changing diapers, changing lives. All of these are great mission statements. They can easily be recited as part of an elevator speech when someone asks you in an elevator, what does that organization do? Well, they're changing diapers and changing lives. It's awesome. These are also all measurable, meaning that you can measure exactly how much community benefit you get from these missions. If you work for one of these organizations, volunteer there or sit on the board, you will remember your mission statement. It should be on everything you do. It should be on the homepage. It should be in email signature lines. And when you meet and plan programs for the organization, you will start with this prevalent in your mind. The CEO of Smithsonian asks, should we create a new program on incarceration in America? One of our funders is interested in doing that. Does it increase or diffuse knowledge? And you, as staff, may make sure that it does. Let's make a traveling exhibit about incarceration in America that tells the whole story. At Beckman, they will work differently than other hospitals if all the staff have in mind that they are treating the whole person, not just the disease. All of these things are measurable, so you can see if you are accomplishing your mission. At TED, they can measure how many ideas they are putting out there by keeping statistics on new TED Talks and conferences and spreading them farther by partnering with local producers on TEDx events. All of this is measurable. How many new ideas? How far are they spreading? And their mission statement is only three words, ideas worth spreading. A great mission statement, taken as a mantra by all stakeholders as a point of pride, can be the catalyst to transform an organization, change directions, create new vision, and bring a team together around a mission. Once an organization is driven by a mission, it cannot fail. Everything can be overcome. Once everyone has drunk the Kool-Aid, it stops being a job and becomes a cult, in the best sense of the word, where people are driven for one common purpose around a mission. At that point, the organization is unstoppable. What is the answer to the marketing director's response that the mission statement isn't important? A response given by a tired, burned-out employee working for a paycheck? Your job will be to turn him or her into an energized, excited employee working for a mission. They may not be bad at their job, but they never felt the power of the mission to transform a community. And their job as a marketing professional will be to harness that power and spread it. How far would Christianity have gotten if the 12 apostles were just picking up a check and not moved by the mission? Or where would Islam be without a motivated Muhammad? A mission needs missionaries who are dedicated to an idea. The mission statement is that simple and pure idea in ink. Your stakeholders are the word made flesh, passion, energy, moving on a mission. We can go back to the idea of Tom Sawyer painting a fence. Everything can be fun with the right attitude. We all must get more people painting the fence with us. We are all Tom Sawyer. We are all St. Paul. We are all Muhammad. This is what success looks like. It may translate into millions of dollars in dynamic programs, but it all starts with passion for a mission. Thank you for listening to this episode of 501c3 BS, Deprogramming for Organizational Growth. I am your host, Zoo Velasco. You can find us on Twitter at 501c3bs, on our website at 501c3bs.org, or at zootvelasco.com. Become a follower to our podcast. The music is provided to us by the traditional Brazilian choral music group, Grupo Falso Baiano, and Amy Molinelli. You can find them at grupofalsobaiano.com. There'll also be a link from our website. Thanks for listening, and have a great day free from BS.